gesture, a very expressive glance, then exited without a word. Sandoval and Zangenis headed out after her, not even looking at Geralt at all. Pockmarked Axel stood up and crossed his arms on his chest. He looked at Geralt for a long time, lengthily and rather unpleasantly.
"It was a mistake to invite you," he said finally. "I knew it, but I deluded myself in thinking you'd muster up even a semblance of good manners."
"It was a mistake to accept your invitation," Geralt replied coldly.
"I also knew it, but I deluded myself in thinking I would receive answers to my questions. How many numbered masterpieces are still at large? How many similar masterworks did Malaspina, Alsor, and Idarran manufacture, and the esteemed Ortolan? How many more monsters bearing your plates will I have to kill? I, a witcher, prophylactic agent and antidote?" I didn't receive an answer, and I well apprehend why not.
Regarding good manners, however, fuck off, Ispaza. Ispaza, the pockmarked, slammed the door as he went out, so hard that plaster fell from the ceiling.
"I don't think I made a good impression," concluded the witcher. "But I didn't expect to, hence there is no disappointment. But that probably isn't everything, is it? So much trouble to get me here, and that will be all. Why, if it's like that, will I find a tavern selling alcohol in the suburbs? Can I toddle along now?"
"No," replied Harland Zara. "No, you can't."
"Because it's by no means all," added Pinity.
The chamber he was led to wasn't typical of the rooms where sorcerers usually received applicants. Usually, Geralt was well acquainted with the custom, mages gave audiences in large rooms with very formal, often severe and cheerless decor. It was practically unthinkable for a sorcerer to receive anybody in a private, personal room, a room able to provide information about the disposition, tastes and predilections of a mage, particularly about the type and specific character of the magic they made. This time, it was totally different. The chamber's walls were decorated with numerous prints and watercolours, every last one of them of erotic or downright pornographic character. Models of sailing ships were displayed on shelves, delighting the eye with the precision of their details. Miniature sails proudly billowed out on tiny ships in bottles. There were numerous display cases of various sizes, full of toy soldiers, cavalry and infantry, in all sorts of formations. Opposite the entrance, also behind glass, hung a stuffed and mounted brown trout, of considerable size for a trout.
"Be seated, witcher."
Pinity, it became clear at once, was in charge. Geralt sat down, scrutinised the stuffed trout. The fish must have weighed a good 15 pounds alive, assuming it wasn't a plaster imitation.
"Magic protects us from being eavesdropped upon." Pinity swept a hand through the air. "We shall thus be able, finally, to speak freely about the real reasons for your being brought here, Geralt of Rivia. The trout, which so interests you, was caught on a fly in the River Ribbon, and weighed 14 pounds 9 ounces. It was released alive, and the display case contains a magically created copy. And now, please concentrate on what I'm about to tell you."
"I'm ready for anything."
"We're curious to know what experience you have with demons."
Geralt raised his eyebrows.
He hadn't been expecting that. And a short time before, he had thought that nothing would surprise him.
"And what is a demon, in your opinion?"
Harland Zara grimaced and shifted suddenly. Pinity appeased him with a look.
"There is a department of supernatural phenomena at the Academy of Oxenford," he said. "Masters of magic give guest lectures there, some of which concern the subject of demons and demonism, in the many aspects of that phenomenon, including the physical, metaphysical, philosophical, and moral. But I think I'm telling you about it needlessly, for you attended those lectures, after all. I remember you, even though as a visiting student you would usually sit in the back row of the lecture theatre. I therefore repeat the question regarding your experience of demons. Be good enough to answer, without being a smart aleck, if you please, or feigning astonishment."
"There isn't a scrap of pretense in my astonishment," Geralt replied dryly. "It's so sincere, it pains me." How can it not astonish me when I, a simple witcher, a simple prophylactic agent, an even more simple antidote, am asked about my experience with demons? And the questions are being asked by masters of magic who lecture about demonism and its aspects at the university.
Answer the question.
I'm a witcher, not a sorcerer, which means my experience comes nowhere near yours regarding demons. I attended your lectures at Oxenfurth, Gwynkamp. Anything important reached the back row of the lecture theatre. Demons are creatures from different worlds than ours. Elemental planes, dimensions, space-times, or whatever they're called. In order to have any kind of experience with a demon, you have to invoke it, meaning forcibly extract it from its plane. It can only be accomplished using magic.
Not magic, but goetia, interrupted Pinity. There's a fundamental difference. And don't tell us what we already know. Answer the question that was asked. I request it for the third time, amazed by my own patience.
I'll answer the question. Yes, I have dealt with demons. I was hired twice in order to eliminate them. I've dealt with two demons, with one that entered a wolf and another that possessed a human being.
You dealt with them?
Yes, I did. It wasn't easy.
But it was feasible, interjected Zara, in spite of what's claimed. And it's claimed that it's impossible to destroy a demon.
I didn't claim I ever destroyed a demon. I killed a wolf and a human being. Do the details interest you?
Very much.
I acted alongside a priest in the case of the wolf that had, in broad daylight, killed and ripped 11 people to pieces. Magic and sword triumphed side by side. When, after a hard fight, I finally killed the wolf, the demon possessing it broke free in the form of a large glowing ball and devastated a fair stretch of forest, scattering the trees all around. It didn't pay any attention to me or the priest, but cleared the forest in the opposite direction. And then it disappeared, probably returning to its dimension. The priest insisted he deserved the credit, that his exorcisms had dispatched the demon to the beyond. Although, I think the demon went away because he was simply bored.
And the other case?
Was more interesting. I killed a possessed man, he continued, without being pressed. And that was it. No spectacular side effects. No ball lightning, auroras, thunderbolts or whirlwinds. Not even a foul smell. I've no idea what happened to the demon. Some priests and mages, your confrères, examined the dead man. They didn't find or discover anything. The body was cremated, because the process of decay proceeded quite normally, and the weather was very hot.
He broke off. The sorcerers looked at each other. Their faces were inscrutable.
That would be, as I understand it, the only proper way of dealing with a demon, Harlan Zara finally said. To kill, to destroy the energumen, meaning the possessed person. The person, I stress. They must be killed at once, without waiting or deliberating. They should be chopped up with a sword. And that's it. Is that the witcher method? The witcher technique?
You're doing poorly, Zara. That's not how it's done. In order to insult someone properly, you need more than overwhelming desire, enthusiasm and fervour. You need technique.
Pax, pax.
Pinity headed off an argument again. We are simply establishing the facts. You told us that you killed a man. Those were your very words. Your witcher code is meant to preclude killing people. You claim to have killed an energumen, a person who'd been possessed by a demon.
After that fact, i.e. the execution of a person,
no spectacular effects were observed, to quote you again.
Where, then, is your certainty that it wasn't...
Enough! Geralt interrupted. Enough of that, Gwynkamp. These illusions are going nowhere. You want facts? By all means, they are as follows. I killed him because it was necessary. I killed him to save the lives of other people, and I received a dispensation from the law to do it. It was granted to me in haste, albeit in quite high-sounding words. A state of absolute necessity, a circumstance precluding the lawlessness of a forbidden deed, sacrificing one good in order to save another one, a real, direct threat. It was indeed real and direct. You ought to regret you didn't see the possessed man in action, what he did, what he was capable of. I know little of the philosophical and metaphysical aspects of demons, but their physical aspect is truly spectacular. It can be astonishing, take my word for it.
We believe you, confirmed Piniti, exchanging glances with Zara again.
Of course we believe you.
Because we've also seen a thing or two.
I don't doubt it, the Witcher grimaced. And I didn't doubt that during your lectures at Oxenfurt. It was apparent you knew what you were talking about. The theoretical underpinning really came in handy with that wolf and that man. I knew what it was about. The two cases had an identical basis. What did you call it, Zara? A method? A technique? And thus, it was a magical method, and the technique was also magical. Some sorcerer summoned the demon using spells, extracted it forcibly from its plane, with the obvious intention of exploiting it for their own magical goals. That's the basis of demonic magic, Goetia. That's the basis of Goetia. Invoking a demon, using it, and then releasing it. In theory. Because in practice, it happens that the sorcerer, instead of freeing the demon after using it, imprisons it magically in a body. That of a wolf, for example. Or a human being. For a sorcerer, as Altsur and Edaran have shown us, likes to experiment. Likes observing what a demon does in someone else's skin when it's set free. For a sorcerer, like Altsur, is a sick pervert who enjoys and is entertained by watching the killing wrought by a demon. That has occurred, hasn't it?
Various things have occurred, said Harlan Zara in a slow, drawling voice. It's stupid to generalize and low to reproach, and to remind you of witchers who didn't shrink from robbery, who didn't hesitate to work as hired assassins. Am I to remind you of the psychopaths who wore medallions with a cat's head and who were also amused by the killing being wrought around them?
Gentlemen. Piniti raised a hand, silencing the witcher, who was preparing to make a rejoinder. This isn't a session of the town council, so don't try to outdo one another in vices and pathologies. It's probably more judicious to admit that no one is perfect. Everyone has their vices, and even celestial creatures are no strangers to pathologies, apparently. Let's concentrate on the problem before us, and which demands a solution. Goetia is prohibited, Piriti began after a long silence, because it's an extremely dangerous practice. Sadly, the simple evocation of a demon doesn't demand great knowledge, nor great magical abilities. It's enough to possess a necromantic grimoire, and there are plenty of them on the black market. It is, however, difficult to control a demon once invoked without knowledge or skills. A self-taught goetic practitioner can think himself lucky if the invoked demon simply breaks away, frees itself, and flees. Many of them end up torn to shreds. Thus, invoking demons, or any other creatures from elemental planes and para-elements, was prohibited and had the threat of severe punishments imposed on it. There exists a system of control that guarantees the observance of the prohibition. However, there is a place that was excluded from that control.
Risberg Castle. Of course.
Of course. Risberg cannot be controlled, for the system of Goetia control I was talking about was created here, after all, as a result of experiments carried out here. Thanks to tests carried out here, the system is still being perfected. Other research is being conducted here, and other experiments of a wide variety. Various things and phenomena are studied here, Witcher. Various things are done here. Not always legal, and not always moral. The end justifies the means. That slogan could hang over the gate to Risberg.
And beneath that slogan ought to be added, what happens at Risberg stays at Risberg, added Zara. Experiments are carried out here under supervision. Everything is monitored.
Clearly not everything, Geralt stated sourly, because something escaped.
Something escaped. Piniti was theatrically calm. There are currently 18 masters working at the castle, and on top of that, well over 40 apprentices and novices. Most of the latter are only a few formalities away from the title of master. We fear, we have reason to suppose before that, someone from that large group wanted to play at Goetia.
Don't you know who?
We do not.
Harlan Zara replied, without batting an eye. But the Witcher knew he was lying.
In May, and at the beginning of June, 3 large-scale crimes were committed in the vicinity.
The sorcerer didn't wait for further questions.
In the vicinity, meaning here, on the hill, between 12 and 20 miles from Risberg. Each time, forest settlements, the homesteads of foresters and other forest workers were targeted. All the residents were murdered in the settlements. No one was left alive. Post-mortem examinations confirmed that the crimes must have been committed by a demon, or, more precisely, an energumen, someone possessed by a demon. A demon that was invoked here at the castle.
We have a problem, Geralt of Rivia. We have to solve it. And we hope you'll help us with it. Sending matter is an elaborate, sophisticated, and subtle thing. Hence, before setting about teleporting, one must, without fail, defecate and empty the bladder. Geoffrey Monk, The Theory and Practice of Using Teleportals. Chapter 10. As usual, Roach snorted and protested on seeing the blanket, and fear and protest could be heard in her snorting. She didn't like it when the Witcher covered her head. She liked even less what occurred right after it was covered. Geralt wasn't in the least surprised at the mare, because he didn't like it either. Naturally, it didn't behove him to snort or splutter, but it didn't stop him expressing his disapproval in another form.
"Your aversion to teleportation is truly surprising," said Harlansara,
showing his astonishment for the umpteenth time. The Witcher didn't join in the discussion. Zara hadn't expected him to.
"We've been transporting you for over a week," he continued, "and each time you put on the look of a condemned man being led to the scaffold. Ordinary people, I can understand. For them, matter transfer remains a dreadful, unimaginable thing. But I thought that you, a Witcher, had more experience in matters of magic. These aren't the times of Geoffrey Monk's first portals. Today, teleportation is a common and absolutely safe thing. Teleportals are safe, and teleportals opened by me are absolutely safe."
The Witcher sighed. He'd happened to observe the effects of the safe-functioning teleportals more than once, and he'd also helped sorting the remains of people who'd used teleportals, which was why he knew that declarations about their safety could be classified along with such statements as, "My little dog doesn't bite," "My son's a good boy," "This stew's fresh," "I'll give you the money back the day after tomorrow at the latest," "He was only getting something out of my eye," "The good of the fatherland comes before everything," and "Just answer a few questions and you're free to go." There wasn't a choice or an alternative, however. In accordance with the plan adopted at Risberg, Geralt's daily task was to patrol a selected region of the hills and the settlements, colonies and homesteads there. Places where Pinity and Zara feared another attack by the energumen. Settlements like that were spread over the entire hills, sometimes quite far from each other. Geralt had to admit and accept the fact that effective patrolling wouldn't have been possible without the help of teleportational magic. To maintain secrecy, Pinity and Zara had constructed the portals at the end of the Risberg complex, in a large, empty, musty room in need of refurbishment, where cobwebs stuck to your face and shriveled-up mouse droppings crunched under your boots. A spell was activated on a wall covered in damp patches and slimy marks, and then the brightly shining outline of a door, or rather a gateway, appeared, beyond which swirled an opaque, iridescent glow. Geralt walked the blindfolded mare into the glow, and then things became unpleasant. There was a flash, and he stopped seeing, hearing, or feeling anything, apart from cold. Cold was the only thing felt inside the black nothingness, amid silence, amorphousness, and timelessness, because the teleport dulled and extinguished all the other senses. Fortunately, only for a split second. The moment passed, the real world flared up, and the horse, snorting with terror, clattered its horseshoes on the hard ground of reality.
"The horse taking fright is understandable," Zara stated again, "while your anxiety, Witcher, is utterly irrational."
"Anxiety is never irrational," Geralt thought to himself, "aside from psychological disturbances. It was one of the first things novice witches were taught. It's good to feel fear. If you feel fear, it means there's something to be feared, so be vigilant. Fear doesn't have to be overcome. Just don't yield to it, and you can learn from it."
"Where to today?"
asked Zara, opening the lacquer box in which he kept his wand.
"What region?"
"Dry rocks.
Try to get to Maple Grove before sundown. Pinnerty or I will pick you up from there. Ready?
For anything.
Zara waved his hand and wand in the air, as though conducting an orchestra, and Geralt thought he could even hear music. The sorcerer melodiously chanted a long spell that sounded like a poem being recited. Flaming lines flared up on the wall, then linked up to form a shining rectangular outline. The witcher swore under his breath, calmed his pulsating medallion, jabbed the mare with his heels, and rode her into the milky nothingness. Blackness. Silence. Amorphousness. Timelessness. Cold. And suddenly, a flash and a shock, the thud of hooves on hard ground. The crimes of which the sorcerers suspected the energumen, the person possessed by a demon, were carried out in the vicinity of Risberg, in an uninhabited area called the Tukai Hills, a chain of upland covered in ancient woodland, separating Temeria from Brugge. The hills owed their name, some people insisted, to a legendary hero called Tukai, or to something completely different, as others claimed. Since there weren't any other hills in the region, it became common to simply say the hills, and that shortened name also appeared on many maps. The hills stretched in a wide belt about 100 miles long and 20 to 30 miles wide. The western part, in particular, was worked intensively by foresters. Large-scale felling had been carried out, and industries and crafts linked to felling and forestry had developed. Large, medium, small, and quite tiny, permanent and makeshift, tolerably and poorly built settlements, colonies, homesteads and camps of the people earning their living by forest crafts had been established in the wilderness. The sorcerers estimated that around 4 dozen such settlements existed throughout the hills. Massacres, from whom no one escaped with their life, had occurred in 3 of them. Dry rocks, a complex of low limestone hills surrounded by dense forests, formed the westernmost edge of the hills, the western border of the patrol region. Geralt had been there before, he knew the area. A lime kiln, used for burning limestone, had been built in a clearing at the edge of the forest. The end product of this burning was quicklime. Pinnerty, when they were there together, explained what the lime was for, but Geralt had listened inattentively and forgot it. Lime, of any kind, lay quite far beyond his sphere of interests. But a colony of people had sprung up by the kiln, who made a living from said lime. He had been entrusted with their protection, and only that mattered. The lime burners recognized him. One of them waved his hat at him. Geralt returned the greeting. "I'm doing my job," he thought. "I'm doing my duty. Doing what they pay me for." He guided Roach towards the forest. He had about a half-hour ride along a forest track ahead of him. Nearly a mile separated him from the next settlement. It was called Pointer's Clearing. The Witcher covered a distance of from 7 to 10 miles over the course of a day. Depending on the region, that meant visiting anything from a handful to more than a dozen homesteads, and then reaching an agreed-upon location from where one of the sorcerers would teleport him back to the castle before sundown. The pattern was repeated the following day, when another region of the hills was patrolled. Geralt chose the regions at random, wary of routines and patterns that might easily be decoded. Despite that, the task turned out to be quite monotonous. The Witcher, however, wasn't bothered by monotony. He was accustomed to it in his profession. In most cases, only patience, perseverance, and determination guaranteed a successful kill. Actually, never before, and this was pertinent, had anyone ever been willing to pay for his patience, perseverance, and determination as generously as the sorcerers of Risberg. So he couldn't complain. He just had to do his job, without believing overly in the success of the enterprise. "You presented me to Ortolan and all the high-ranking mages immediately after my arrival at Risberg," he pointed out to the sorcerers. "Even if one assumes that the person guilty of the Goetia and the massacres wasn't among them, news of a witcher at the castle must have spread. Your wrongdoer, assuming he exists, will understand in no time what's afoot, so will go into hiding and abandon his activities, entirely, or will wait until I leave and then begin again."
"We can stage your departure," replied Pinnerty, "and your continued stay at the castle will be a secret. Fear not. Magic exists to guarantee the confidentiality of what must remain a secret. Believe us, we can work that kind of magic."
So you believe my daily patrols make sense?
They do. Do your job, Witcher, and don't worry about the rest.
Geralt solemnly promised not to worry, although he had his doubts, and didn't entirely trust the sorcerers. He had his suspicions, but had no intention of divulging them. Axes banged and saws rasped briskly in Pointer's clearing, and there was a smell of fresh timber and resin. The relentless felling of the forest was being carried out by the woodcutter Pointer and his large family. The older members of the family chopped and sawed, the younger ones stripped the branches from the trunks, and the youngest carried brushwood. Pointer saw Geralt, sank his axe into a trunk and wiped his forehead.
"Greetings!"
The Witcher rode closer.
"How are things? Everything in order?"
Pointer looked at him, long and somberly.
"Things are bad," he said at last.
"Why?"
Pointer said nothing for a long time.
"Someone stole a saw," he finally snarled. "Stole a saw? How could it be, eh? Why do you patrol the clearing, sire, eh? And Torquil roams the forest with his men, eh? Gardeners, are you? And saws going missing?"
"I'll look into it,"
Geralt lied easily.
"I'll look into the matter. Farewell."
Pointer spat. In the next clearing, this time Dudex, everything was in order. No one was threatening Dudex, and probably no one had stolen anything. Geralt didn't even stop. He headed towards the next settlement, called Ashburner. Forest tracks, furrowed by wagon wheels, eased his movement between the settlements. Geralt often happened upon carts, some loaded with forestry products, and others unladen, on their way to be loaded up. He also met groups of pedestrian wayfarers. There was an astonishing amount of traffic. Even deep in the forest, it was seldom completely deserted. Occasionally, the large rump of a woman on all fours, gathering berries or other forest fruits, emerged above the ferns, like the back of a narwhal from the ocean waves. Sometimes, something with a stiff gait and the posture and expression of a zombie mooned about among the trees, turning out to be an old geezer looking for mushrooms. From time to time, something snapped the brushwood with a frenzied yell. It was children, the offspring of the woodsmen and charcoal burners, armed with bows made of sticks and string. It was astonishing how much damage the children were capable of causing in the forest using such primitive weapons. It was horrifying to think that one day these youngsters would grow up and make use of professional equipment. Ashburner Settlement, where it was also peaceful with nothing disturbing the work or threatening the workers, took its name, very originally, from the production of potash, a valued agent in the glassmaking and soap-making industries. Potash, the sorcerers explained to Geralt, was obtained from the ash of the charcoal which was burned in the locality. Geralt had already visited, and planned to visit again that day, the neighbouring charcoal burner settlement. The nearest one was called Oak Grove, and the way there, indeed, led beside a huge stand of immense oaks, several hundred years old. A murky shadow always lay beneath the oaks, even at noon, even in full sun and under a cloudless sky. It was there, by the oaks, less than a week before, that Geralt had first encountered Constable Torquil and his squad. When men in green camouflage outfits with longbows on their backs galloped out of the oaks and surrounded him from all sides, Geralt first took them for foresters, members of the notorious volunteer paramilitary unit who called themselves the Guardians of the Forest, and whose mission was to hunt non-humans, elves and dryads in particular, and murder them in elaborate ways. It sometimes happened that people travelling through the forests were accused by the foresters of supporting the non-humans or trading with them. They punished the former and the latter by lynching, and it was difficult to prove one's innocence. The encounter by the oaks thus promised to be extremely violent, so Geralt sighed with relief when the green-coated horsemen turned out to be law enforcers carrying out their duties. Their commander, a swarthy character with a piercing gaze, having introduced himself as a constable in the service of the bailiff of Gors Velen, bluntly and brusquely demanded that Geralt reveal his identity, and when he was given it, demanded to see his witcher's emblem. The medallion with the snarling wolf was not only considered satisfactory proof, but aroused the evident admiration of the guardian of the law. The esteem, so it seemed, also extended to Geralt himself. The constable dismounted, asked the witcher to do the same, and invited him for a short conversation.
I am Franz Torquil. The constable dropped the pretense of a brusque martinet, revealing himself to be a calm, business-like man. You, indeed, are the Witcher Geralt of Rivia. The same Geralt of Rivia who saved a woman and child from death in Ansages a month ago by killing a man-eating monster. Geralt pursed his lips. He had happily already forgotten about Ansages, about the monster with the plate and the man of whose death he was guilty. He had fretted over that a long time, had finally managed to convince himself that he'd done as much as he could, that he'd saved the other two, and that the monster wouldn't kill anyone else. Now it all came back. Franz Torquil could not have noticed the clouds that passed over the Witcher's brow following his words, and if he had, he wasn't bothered. It would appear, Witcher, that we're patrolling these thickets for the same reasons, he continued. Bad things began to happen in the Tukai Hills after the spring. Very unpleasant things have occurred here, and it's time to put an end to them. After the slaughter in Arches, I advised the sorcerers from Risberg to hire a Witcher. They took it to heart, I see, although they don't like doing as they're told. The constable took off his hat and brushed needles and seeds from it. His headgear was of identical cut to Dandelion's, only made of poorer quality felt, and instead of an egret's feather, it was decorated with a pheasant's tail feather. "I've been guarding law and order in the hills for a long time," he continued, looking Geralt in the eyes. "Without wishing to boast, I've captured many a villain and bedecked many a tall tree with them. But what's been going on lately? That requires an additional person. Somebody like you. Somebody who is well-versed in spells and knows about monsters, who isn't scared of a beast or a ghost or a dragon. And so, right well, we shall guard and protect folk together. I, for my meagre salary. You, for the sorcerer's purse. I wonder if they pay you well for this work. 500 Novigradian crowns transferred in advance to my bank account. Geralt had no intention of revealing that. The sorcerers of Risberg bought my services and my time for that sum. 15 days of my time. And when 15 days have passed, irrespective of what happens, the same amount will be transferred again. A handsome sum. More than satisfactory.
Aye, they're surely paying a good deal.
Franz Torquil quickly realized he wouldn't be receiving an answer.
They can afford to. And I'll tell you this. No money here is too much. But this is a hideous matter, Witcher. Hideous, dark and unnatural. The evil that raged here came from Risberg, I swear. As sure as anything, something's gone awry in the wizard's magic, because that magic of theirs is like a sack of vipers, no matter how tightly it's tied up. Something venomous will always crawl out.
The constable glanced at Geralt. That glance was enough for him to understand that the Witcher would tell him nothing. No details of his agreement with the sorcerers.
Did they acquaint you with the details? Did they tell you what happened in Yewtrees, Arches and Rogovichna?
More or less. More or less, Torquil repeated.
3 days after Beltana, the Yewtree settlement, 9 woodcutters killed. Middle of May, a sawyer's homestead in Arches, 12 killed. Beginning of June, Rogovichna, a colony of charcoal burners, 15 victims. That's the state of affairs, more or less, for today, Witcher. But that's not the end. I give my word that it's not the end.
Yewtrees, Arches, Rogovichna. 3 mass crimes. And there's not an accident, not a demon who broke free and fled, whom a bungling goetic practitioner was unable to control. It was premeditated. It has all been planned. Someone has thrice imprisoned a demon in a host and sent it out thrice to murder.
I've seen plenty. The constable's jaw muscles worked powerfully. Plenty of battlefields, plenty of corpses, robberies, pillages, bandits' raids, savage family revenge and forays, even one wedding that 6 corpses were carried out of, including the groom. But slitting tendons to then butcher the lame. Scalping. Biting out throats. Tearing apart someone alive, dragging their guts out of their bellies, and finally building pyramids from the heads of the slaughtered. What are we facing here, I ask? Didn't the wizards tell you that? Didn't they explain why they need a witcher?
What do sorcerers from Risberg need a witcher for? So much so that he needs to be forced by blackmail to cooperate. For the sorcerers could have coped admirably with any demon or any host themselves without any great difficulty. Fulmen Sphericus, or Sagitta Aurea.
The first two spells of many that spring to mind could have been used on an energumen at a distance of 100 paces, and it's doubtful that it would survive the treatment. But no, the sorcerers prefer a witcher. Why? The answer's simple. A sorcerer, confrater or comrade has become an energumen. One of their colleagues invokes demons and lets them enter him and runs around killing. He's already done it 3 times. But the sorcerers can't exactly shoot ball lightning at a comrade or run him through with a golden arrowhead. They need a witcher to deal with a comrade. There was something Geralt couldn't and didn't want to tell Torquil. He couldn't and didn't want to tell him what he'd told the sorcerers in Risberg, and which they had shrugged off, as you would something inconsequential.
You're still doing it. You're still playing at this, as you call it, Goetia. You invoke these creatures, summon them from their planes behind closed doors, with the same tired old story. We'll control them, master them, force them to be obedient. We'll set them to work. With the same inevitable justification, we'll learn their secrets, force them to reveal their mysteries and arcana, and thus we'll redouble the power of our own magic. We'll heal and cure. We'll eliminate illness and natural disasters. We'll make the world a better place and make people happier. And it inevitably turns out that it's a lie, that all you care about is power and control. Zara, it was obvious, was spoiling to retaliate, but Pinity held him back. Regarding creatures from behind closed doors, Geralt continued, creatures we are calling, for convenience, demons. You certainly know the same as we witches do, which we found out a long time ago, which is written about in witcher registers and chronicles. Demons will never, ever reveal any secrets or arcana to you. They will never let themselves be put to work. They let themselves be invoked and brought to our world for just one reason. They want to kill. Because they enjoy it. And you know that. But you allow them in.
Perhaps we'll pass from theory to practice, said Pinity, after a very long silence. I think something like that has also been written about in witcher registers and chronicles. And it is not moral treatises, but rather practical solutions we expect from you, Witcher.
Glad to have met you. Franz Torquil shook Geralt's hand. And now to work, patrolling. To guard. To protect folk. That's what we're here for. We are.
Once in the saddle, the constable leaned over.
I'll bet, he said softly, that you're most aware of what I'm about to tell you. But I'll say it anyway. Beware, Witcher. Be heedful. You don't want to talk, but I know what I know. The wizards, sure as anything, hired you to fix what they spoiled themselves, to clear up the mess they made. But if something doesn't go right, they'll be looking for a scapegoat. And you have all the makings of one.
The sky over the forest began to darken. A sudden wind blew up in the branches of the trees. Distant thunder rumbled.
If it's not storms, it's downpours, said Franz Torquil when they next met. There's thunder and rain every other day. And the result is that when you go looking for tracks, they're all washed away by the rain. Convenient, isn't it? As though it's been ordered. It too stinks of sorcery. Risberg's sorcery, to be precise. It's said that wizards can charm the weather. Raise up a magical wind or enchant a natural one to blow whichever way they want. Chase away clouds, stir up rain or hail, and unleash a storm too, as if on cue. When it suits them. In order, for example, to cover their tracks. What say you to that, Geralt?
Sorcerers indeed can't do much, he replied. They've always controlled the weather from the first landing, when apparently only Jan Becker's spells averted disaster. But to blame mages for all adversities and disasters is probably an exaggeration. You're talking about natural phenomena, after all, Franz. It's simply that kind of season. A season of storms.
He spurred on his mare. The day was already drawing to a close, and he intended to patrol a few more settlements before dusk. First, the nearest colony of charcoal burners, located in a clearing called Rogovichna. Pinity had been with him the first time he was there. To the witcher's amazement,
Instead of the site of the massacre being a gloomy, godforsaken wilderness, it turned out to be a place of intense work, full of people. The charcoal burners, who called themselves smokers, were labouring on the building site of a new kiln used for burning charcoal. The charcoal kiln was a dome of wood, not some random heap by any means, but a meticulously and evenly arranged mound. When Geralt and Pinity arrived at the clearing, they found the charcoal burners covering the mound with moss and carefully topping it with soil. Another charcoal kiln, built earlier, was already in operation, meaning it was smoking copiously. The entire clearing was enveloped in eye-stinging smoke, and an acrid, resinous smell attacked the nostrils.
"How long ago,"
the witcher coughed,
"how long ago did you say was..."
"Exactly a month ago."
"People are working here, as if nothing happened."
"There's a great demand for charcoal," explained Pinity.
"Charcoal is the only fuel that can achieve a high enough temperature for smelting. The furnaces near Dorian and Gorsvelen couldn't function without it, and smelting is the most important and most promising branch of industry. Because of demand, charcoal burning is a lucrative job, and economics, which is like nature and abhors a vacuum." "The massacred smokers were buried over there. Do you see the graves? The sand is still a fresh yellow colour, and new workers replaced them. The charcoal kills smoking, and life goes on."
They dismounted. The smokers were too busy to pay them any attention. If anyone was showing them interest, it was the women and children, a few of whom were running among the shacks.
"Indeed."
Pinity guessed the question before the witcher could ask it. "There are also children among those under the burial mound. Three. And three women. And nine men and youths. Follow me." They walked between cords of seasoning timber. "Several men were killed on the spot, their heads smashed in," the sorcerer said. "The rest of them were incapacitated and immobilized, the heel cords of their feet severed with a sharp instrument. Many of them, including all the children, had their arms additionally broken. The captives were then murdered. Their throats were torn apart, they were eviscerated and their chests ripped open. Their backs were flayed and they were scalped. One of the women..."
"Enough!"
The witcher looked at the black patches of blood, still visible on the birch trunks.
"That's enough, Pinity.
You ought to know who, what you're dealing with."
"I already do."
And so just the final details. Some of the bodies were missing. All the dead were decapitated, and the heads arranged in a pyramid right here. There were 15 heads and 13 bodies. Two bodies disappeared. The dwellers of two other settlements, yew trees and archers, were murdered in almost identical fashion," the sorcerer continued after a short pause. "9 people were killed in yew trees and 12 in archers. I'll take you there tomorrow. We still have to drop in at New Tar Works today. It's not far. You'll see what the manufacture of pitch and wood tar looks like. The next time you have to rub wood tar onto something, you'll know where it came from."
"I have a question."
"Yes?"
"Did you really have to resort to blackmail? Didn't you believe I'd come to Risberg of my own free will?"
"Opinions were divided."
"Whose idea was it to throw me into a dungeon in Kerak, then release me, but still threaten me with the court? Who came up with the idea? It was Coral, wasn't it?"
Pinity looked at him. For a long time.
"Yes," he finally admitted. "It was her idea. And her plan. To imprison, release, and threaten you. And then finally have the case dismissed. She sorted it out immediately after you left. Your file in Kerak is now as clean as a whistle. Any other questions?" "No? Let's ride to New Tar Works then, and have a look at the wood tar. Then I'll open the teleportal, and we'll return to Risberg. In the evening, I'd like to pop out for a spot of fly fishing. The mayflies are swarming. The trout will be feeding. Have you ever angled, Witcher? Does hunting attract you?"
"I hunt when I have an urge for a fish. I always carry a line with me."
Pinity was silent for a long time.
"A line,"
he finally uttered in a strange tone.
"A line with a lead weight. With many little hooks, on which you skewer worms?" "Yes. Why?"
"Nothing. It was a needless question.
He was heading towards Pine Tops, the next charcoal burner settlement, when the forest suddenly fell silent. The jays were dumbstruck. The cries of magpies went silent all of an instant. The drumming of a woodpecker suddenly broke off. The forest had frozen in terror. Geralt spurred his mare to a gallop. Chapter 11. The charcoal kiln in Pine Tops was close to a logging site, as the charcoal burners used woody debris left over after felling. The burning had begun a short time before, and foul-smelling yellowish smoke was streaming from the top of the dome, as though from a volcano's crater. The smell couldn't mask the odour of death hanging over the clearing. Geralt dismounted and drew his sword. He saw the first corpse, without head or feet, just beside the charcoal kiln, blood spurting over the soil covering the mound. Not far away lay three more bodies, unrecognizably mutilated. Blood had soaked into the absorbent forest sand, leaving darkening patches. Two more cadavers, those of a man and a woman, were lying nearer to the center of the clearing, and the campfire encircled by stones. The man's throat had been torn out so savagely his cervical vertebrae were visible. The upper part of the woman's body was lying in the embers of the fire, smeared in groats from an upturned cooking pot. A little further away by a woodpile lay a child, a little boy of perhaps 5 years old. He had been rent in two. Somebody, or rather something, had seized him by both legs and torn them apart. Geralt saw another body. This one had been disemboweled and its guts pulled out. To their full length, or about 2 yards of the large bowel and over 6 of the small. The guts were stretched in a straight, shiny, greyish-pink line, all the way to a shack of pine branches into which they vanished. Inside the shelter, a slim man was lying on his back on a primitive pallet. It was clear at once that he was quite out of place there. His ornate clothing was completely covered in blood, soaked through. But the Witcher noticed it wasn't squirting, gushing or dripping from any of the main blood vessels. Geralt recognized him, despite his face being covered in drying blood. It was that long-haired, slim, somewhat effeminate fop, Sorrel Dagelund, introduced to him during the audience with Ortolan. At that time, he had also been wearing the same braided cloak and embroidered doublet as the other sorcerers, had been sitting among them, and, like the others, had been observing the Witcher with barely concealed aversion. And now he was lying unconscious, in a charcoal burner's shack, covered in blood, with a human intestine coiled around his right wrist, pulled from the belly of a corpse lying not 10 paces away. The Witcher swallowed. "Shall I hack him to death?" he thought. "While he's unconscious. Are Pinity and Zara expecting that? Shall I kill the energumen? Eliminate the goetic practitioner who amuses himself by evoking demons?" A groan shook him out of his reflections. Sorrel Dagelund, it appeared, was coming around. He jerked his head up, moaned, and then slumped back onto the pallet. He lifted himself up, looking vacantly around him. He saw the Witcher and opened his mouth, looked at his blood-spattered stomach and raised a hand to see what he was holding, and began to scream. Geralt looked at his sword, Dandelion's Purchase with the gilt crossguard. He looked at the sorcerer's thin neck, at the swollen vein on it. Sorrel Dagelund unpeeled and stripped the intestine from his hand. He stopped screaming and just groaned, shaking. He got up, first onto his hands and knees, and then onto his feet. He lurched out of the shelter, looked about him, shrieked and made to bolt. The Witcher grabbed him by the collar, set him in one place, and pushed him down to his knees.
"What has..."
Dagelund mumbled, still shaking.
What happened here?"
"I think you know." The sorcerer swallowed loudly.
How did I end up here? Nothing. I don't remember anything. I don't remember anything. Nothing."
"I don't actually believe you."
The invocation."
Dagelund seized his face in his hands.
"I invoked it, and it appeared. In the pentagram. In the chalk circle. and entered me.
Not for the first time, I imagine, eh? Dagoland sobbed. Somewhat theatrically, Geralt couldn't help thinking. He regretted that he hadn't surprised the energumen before the demon had abandoned him. His regret, he realized, wasn't very rational. He was aware how dangerous a confrontation with a demon could be, and he should have been glad he'd avoided it. But he wasn't glad, because at least he would have known what to do. It just had to happen to me, he thought, and not Franz Torquil and his troop. The constable wouldn't have had any qualms or scruples. Bloodied, caught with the entrails of his victim in his fist, the sorcerer would have had a noose around his neck at once and would have been dangling from the handiest bough. Neither hesitations nor doubts would have held Torquil back. It wouldn't have bothered Torquil that the effeminate and scrawny sorcerer was absolutely incapable of slaughtering so many people in such a short time that his blood-soaked clothing hasn't managed to dry out or stiffen, and wouldn't have been able to tear a child apart with his bare hands. No, Torquil wouldn't have had any qualms. But I do. Penity and Zara were sure I wouldn't.
Don't kill me, Dagoland whined. Don't kill me, Witcher. I will never, never more.
Shut up.
I swear I'll never.
Shut up. Are you conscious enough to use magic? To summon the sorcerer from Risberg here?
I have a sigil. I can teleport myself to Risberg.
Not alone. With me. And no tricks. Don't try to stand up. Stay on your knees.
I must stand up. And you, if the teleportation is to work, you must stand close to me. Very close.
Why exactly? Come on. What are you waiting for? Get that amulet out.
It's not an amulet. I said it's a sigil.
Dagoland undid his blood-soaked doublet and shirt. He had a tattoo on his skinny chest, two overlapping circles. The circles were dotted with points of various sizes. It looked a little like the diagram of the planet's orbits that Geralt had once admired at the Academy in Oxenfurt. The sorcerer uttered a melodious spell. The circles shone blue, the points red, and began to rotate.
Now stand close.
Close?
Still closer. Cling to me.
What?
Get in close and hug me.
Dagoland's voice had changed. His eyes, a moment before tearful, now lit up hideously, and his lips contorted repugnantly.
Yes, that's right. Firmly and tenderly, as though I were your Yennefer.
Geralt understood what was on the cards, but he didn't manage to push Dagoland away, strike him with the pommel of his sword, or slash him across the neck with a blade. He was simply too slow. An iridescent glow flashed in Geralt's eyes. In a split second, he plunged into black nothingness, into bitter cold, silence, amorphousness, and timelessness. They landed with a thud, the stone slabs of the floor seemingly leaping up to meet them. The impact threw them apart. Geralt was unable even to look around properly. An intense stench reached his nostrils, the odor of filth mixed with musk. Two sets of immense, mighty hands caught him under the arms and behind his head. Fat fingers closed easily over his biceps. Steely thumbs dug painfully into his nerves, into the brachial plexus. He went totally numb, and his sword slipped from his inert hand. He saw before him a hunchback with a hideous face covered in sores, his head dotted with sparse tufts of stiff hair. The hunchback, standing with his crooked legs wide apart, was pointing a large crossbow at him, or actually, an arbalest with two steel bows, one above the other. The two four-cornered bolts aimed at Geralt were a good 2 inches wide and razor-sharp. Sorrel Dagoland was standing in front of him.
"As you've probably realized," he said, "you haven't ended up at Risberg. You're in my asylum and lair, a place about which the people at Risberg know nothing, where I conduct experiments with my master. I am, as you probably know, Sorrel Albert Amador Dagoland, Magister Magicus. I am what you don't know yet, he who will inflict pain and death on you."
The feigned terror and simulated panic, all appearances, vanished as though blown away by the wind. Everything in the charcoal burner's clearing had been feigned. A quite different Sorrel Dagelund was standing before Geralt as he hung in the paralyzing grip of those gnarled hands. A triumphant Sorrel Dagelund, bursting with arrogance and hubris. Sorrel Dagelund grinning a vicious smile. A smile calling to mind centipedes squeezing through gaps under doors. Disturbed graves. White maggots squirming in carrion. Fat horseflies wriggling their legs in a bowl of broth. The sorcerer came closer. He was holding a steel syringe with a long needle.
"I deceived you like a child in the clearing," he hissed. "You turned out to be as naive as a child. The Witcher, Geralt of Rivia. Although his instinct didn't mislead him, he didn't kill, because he wasn't certain. For he's a good Witcher and a good man. Shall I tell you, good Witcher, what good people are? They're people whom fate hasn't blessed with a chance of profiting from the benefits of being evil. Or, alternatively, people who were given a chance but were too stupid to take advantage of it. It doesn't matter which group you belong to. You let yourself be tricked. You fell into a trap, and I guarantee that you won't get out of it alive."
He lifted the syringe. Geralt felt a prick, and immediately acute pain. A stabbing pain that darkened his eyes, tensed his entire body. A pain so dreadful that only the greatest effort stopped him from screaming. His heart began to beat frantically, and compared to his usual pulse, 4 times slower than that of a normal person, it was an extremely unpleasant sensation. Everything went black. The world spun around, blurred and dissolved. He was dragged away in the glow of magical balls dancing over the bare walls and ceilings. One of the walls he passed was covered in patches of blood and was hung with weapons. He saw broad curved scimitars, huge sickles, gizarm, battle axes and morning stars. They were all streaked with blood. "They were used in yew trees, Arches and Rogovichna," he thought lucidly. "They were used to massacre the charcoal burners in pine tops." He had gone quite numb, had stopped feeling anything. He couldn't even feel the crushing grip of the hands holding him. He didn't realize at once that what he could hear was merry chuckling. Whoever was dragging him was clearly enjoying the situation. The hunchback walking in front with a crossbow was whistling. Geralt had almost lost consciousness. He was shoved down roughly into an upright chair. He could finally see who was dragging him, crushing his armpits with their huge hands. He remembered the giant ogre dwarf, Mikita, Pyrrell Pratt's bodyguard. These two resembled him a little. They could just about have passed for close relatives. They were of similar height to Mikita, reeked similarly. Like him, had no neck, and like him, their teeth protruded from their lower lips like wild boar's tusks. Mikita was bald and bearded, however, while these two didn't have beards. Their simian faces were covered in bristles, and the tops of their egg-shaped heads were adorned with something like tousled oakum. Their eyes were small and bloodshot, their ears large, pointed, and horribly hairy. Their garb bore streaks of blood, and their breath stank as though they'd eaten nothing but garlic, shit, and dead fish for many days.
"Boo, bang, enough laughter. Get to work, both of you. Get out, Pastor, but stay close."
The two giants went out, their great feet slapping. The hunchback, addressed as Pastor, hurried after them. Sorrel Dagelund appeared in the witch's field of view, scrubbed, hair combed, in fresh clothes and looking effeminate. He slid a chair closer, sat down, with a table piled with weighty tomes and grimoires behind him. He looked at the Witcher, grinning malevolently. At the same time, he was playing with and swinging a medallion on a gold chain, which he was winding around a finger. "I treated you to extract of white scorpion's venom," he said detachedly. "Nasty, isn't it? Can't move a hand, a leg, not even a finger. Can't wink, or even swallow. But that's nothing. Uncontrollable movements of your eyeballs and disturbances to your sight will soon follow.
Then you'll feel cramps. Really powerful cramps. They'll probably strain your intercostal muscle.